Welcome to Uncut, a special edition of the Conversations podcast featuring candidates for Texas governor. I'm Brandon Waltons, managing editor of Texas Scorecard and your host. While current Texas Governor Greg Abbott did not accept our invitation, we had the pleasure of speaking with his top three primary opponents. In this episode, we speak with former state senator Don Huffines, who gives his behind-the-scenes perspective of why conservative legislation often fails to pass and what he would do about it as governor. Today in the studio, I have former state senator turned gubernatorial candidate Don Huffines. Don, thank you so much for joining us today. Tell me a little bit about, for folks who may not know who you are, what's your background? What's your story?
Well, thank you, Brandon. It's great to be here, of course. Well, I'm a fifth generation Texan. I was born in Dallas and actually spent my younger years in Greenville, Texas, and we moved to Dallas. And I just grew up in the Metroplex, and of course, I'm a very proud Texan. I'm a God-fearing patriot, and I'm pro-life from conception to natural death, no exceptions, and I love my guns. Let me just say that my political bile started when I was a teenager, and then I started getting active and studying politics. I read some books by Murray Rothbard and others on classic liberalism, and I was 17. I remember it real clearly. My parents were not political. They were typical Texas Democrats. And so I started working, volunteering for the Reagan campaign against Gerald Ford in 76. And I went to my first state, my first county convention when I was 18 by 2 weeks. And so I've supported a lot of candidates over the years, spent thousands and thousands of dollars doing that, and been to a lot of state conventions over 20 years, and been to a delegate to three national conventions. But in 2013, I decided I was tired of yelling at the TV.
Right.
And there was I love my guns, as I said, and you know, there was a trophy on the wall I didn't have, I always say this, and it was a trophy rhino. So he was sitting in Senate District 16, and he was ranked one of the most liberal Republicans in Austin. And I beat him in the primary in 14 and was in the Texas Senate from 14 to 18. But on the personal bio side, I've been married to Mary Catherine. A lot of people know her, my beautiful, perfect wife of 34 years. We have 5 children, 4 boys and a girl. And all 4 boys were Eagle Scouts, and I was Scoutmaster for a long time and had a lot of fun with that program. And we homeschooled our children for their schooling career and make sure they grew up in a good conservative Christian environment. And now I'm a new grandfather. Mary Catherine and I have 3 grandchildren in 18 months and another one due any day now, so it'll be 4 in about 19 months. And it's a whole new chapter.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It is a whole new chapter of life.
Yeah. Well, what did they think when you said, hey, you know, I think I'm going to run for governor?
Oh, it's a family affair.
Yeah.
It really is. I'm very fortunate and very blessed that my family has bought into the program. They did when I was in the Senate, too. And they're a big help. Mary Catherine goes with me on the traveling. And all of them are acting as surrogates, speaking for me around the state and around the Metroplex, wherever they can. Where I can't be, obviously.
Sure. So you were in the Texas Senate from 2014 to through 2018 for 4 years there. What did you get done? What was your time like there?
Well, I got knocked out in 18, let me say that, by a Democrat. When Democrats finished taking over Dallas County, there's 3 Republicans, I think, out of 80-plus positions in the county now that Republicans hold. And by the way, Trump only got 30% of the vote in Dallas County. So it's a tough county for Republicans. But I tell you, I learned a lot in that swamp in Austin. And I tell you, and people need to know, it might not be as wide as the one in Washington, Brandon, but it sure is deep. It's very vindictive in Austin. I got a PhD down there in the swamp. There was a few things I got done and proud of. I was always ranked one of the most conservative state senators the 2 sessions I was there. And according to Secretary of the Senate, I'm the only elected office holder in the history of the state of Texas that they know of, and it's a long history, that never took any money from the government. No pay, no pension. No per diem, no health care, no travel vouchers, no reimbursements, nothing.
Nothing, wow.
And I did that, though, and it was really a big effort to do that in accounting because nobody had ever done it. But it's because the government never hired me. The people hired me. And that's and so I work for the people and not the government. I'm going to do the same as governor. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to take any money from the state of Texas, no pay, pension, no nothing when I'm the governor.
Let's talk a little bit about the Austin Swamp. You mentioned that. What was your experience in the Senate versus what maybe you thought it would be when you were there? In other words, what would surprise people to find out about how Austin works?
Well, I think what surprised me the most, and everyone should know, is how hard elected Republicans work not to be accountable. Mm-hmm. They work very hard not to take the votes. So we get ranked, you know, about our scorecards are ranked by how we vote on bills, which is a good way to do it. But that's not the best. The thing to look at is how hard someone fights to make the rest of the legislators accountable. So they take the votes they don't want to take because they spend all day trying not to. And when I would take the party platform with me in there, and I would take it to our caucus meetings, and I tell a lot of stories about this. I go around the state telling these stories. Like when the very first caucus meeting I went to, we meet at a restaurant. There's 20 Republicans there at the time. And so I take in the party platform, and I take that wherever I went mainly, and I say, you know, we really need to get constitutional carry done and get it into law. This was 2015. And I was the first senator to file that bill. And then all the other senators got so upset with me when I said that. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, let's just get it to the floor and vote on it so everybody can see where you stand on the issue. Mm-hmm. And then we'd be accountable to the voters, you know. And they just got really mad about that. Yeah. Wanted me to apologize for even saying that and trying to hold them accountable. So I committed right then to try to get constitutional carry to the floor of the Senate any way I could. Mm-hmm. And it would only be on an amendment because they wouldn't give me a hearing on the bill. And it really, really made a lot of the Republicans very upset throughout that session. And, of course, getting rid of taxes or anything else they don't mm-hmm. want to vote on. And I point this out to a lot of patriots. They don't really understand. I say, well, how many bills came to the floor of the Texas Senate when I was there that did not pass? And the answer is zero. Every bill that comes to the floor is going to pass. As you know, all the votes are counted in the back room with the fellow club members. They're all part of this club, you see. Mm-hmm. And the key is you want to move up in the food chain in the club. And anyway, all the votes are counted in the back and every bill that comes up is going to pass. And so all the debate on the floor is really for show. Mm-hmm. It's all a big hustle.
How would you as governor fight back against that kind of problem that we do see in state government, where, as you pointed out, I mean, it's very much like a club. You're kind of coming in as a conservative outsider. How do you lead that group of people?
Well, that's one of the main reasons I'm running, is it starts with the top. Everything starts with the governor. The governor is supposed to act as the mediator between the House and the Senate to keep them from fighting. The governor is a leader of the Republican Party. The governor is a leader of the state of Texas. This is about leadership, no excuses. The governor, here's really important for everyone to understand, and it took me a session to figure it out or two, is that the governor of Texas can get any bill done he wants mm-hmm. if he's a leader. Any bill. We control everything in Austin, the House, the Senate, the governor's office for 20 years. Mm-hmm. For 20 years. Well, the governor could get any bill, every bill could get done that he wants. In the first 60 days, the only thing we can work on is whatever the governor declares as an emergency, for instance. So why is it, I put it out there, why is it our Republican priorities are not law? Mm-hmm. Our legislative priorities, they're decided upon by tens of thousands of Republicans. And they're not law because the governor doesn't want them to be law. Mm. He doesn't believe in our party platform. He doesn't believe in our legislative priorities. And neither does a lot of other Republicans that are rhinos down there. And otherwise, it'd all be law. Mm-hmm. So as governor, the governor's got incredible power. incredible power. And I tell you, as governor, when I'm governor, you're going to see something you've never seen before, ever. No one in alive has seen the leverage I'm going to use in that position. Every bill has to come to the governor's desk except the constitutional amendment.
Right.
I get last call on everything.
Yeah.
It's tremendous.
Veto power, yeah.
Yeah, I get to veto it. Or not. And the budget. Of course, the governor gets line item veto power on the budget. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of line items in the big budget we've got. So those are just two of the tools in the toolbox and one of the most powerful tools we have. So I can easily direct legislation by using those two tools right there.
You and Governor Greg Abbott took office at the same time there in 2014. What was his level of involvement during your two sessions? Was he on the Senate floor from time to time? Was he talking to senators? Was he talking to members?
Never, hardly ever. Mm. I don't remember it ever happening. Maybe once. Mm-hmm. In 15, he was perceived as a conservative back mm-hmm. then. He ran in that lane. Nobody ran against him, by the way. Abbott's never had a primary opponent in 30 years in the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. Not a real one. And the only thing he really wanted to get done was pre-K. He wanted universal pre-K. And so it just shows that he got every senator to vote for that. I was on the committee. That was the most Marxist piece of crap legislation I'd ever read. And I voted against it, along with two or three other senators, I think. But he got it all done. Mm-hmm. He can get any bill done he wants. He just was never there. He was never in the legislature. And neither is anyone else running for governor. Okay. I'm the only candidate running that was in the governor. And I think it really does give me an advantage. It gives me a real leg up to understand the process and the players.
Yes. What was your impetus? You talked about kind of your experience being in the Senate. And of course, we've seen what has happened over the last, I guess, year and a half now with coronavirus and mandates and things. What was the impetus where you said, okay, someone's got to run against Governor Greg Abbott. I've got to be that person.
Well, it started in March of 20. Mm-hmm. And we all know what happened when he shredded the Constitution. I alerted everybody via Twitter what was going to happen. And then I put an op-ed in the newspapers in the state begging him to open back up. But in one day, Greg Abbott, unilaterally on his own, because he's an elitist know-it-all, decided that 3.1 million Texans were going to lose their job because he was listening to that lying Fauci up in New York. And they did. He put 3 million Texans out of work, dependent on the government. Tens of thousands of businesses went broke and never came back. He didn't care how long we'd worked in those jobs or how long those businesses had been open and how many sacrifices people made. Yeah, he just closed them all down. And then to top it all off, and he closed our churches. Mm-hmm. He closed our churches, Brandon, on the holiest week of the year, Easter, in 20. You couldn't properly bury the dead. You couldn't properly get married. You probably couldn't get baptized. You couldn't bury the dead properly. You could only have so many people at the funeral. You couldn't visit the sick. Then he keeps a mask mandate on us for 9 months, and people right. thank him for taking that off. That's thanking a thief for bringing your stolen goods back.
Yeah.
And you know, I would have never done any of that. And the Constitution doesn't give me the authority to do it. And I would, of course, I would never operate that way. Whether it's I'm here to protect your medical freedom. I'm not here to protect you, make sure that nobody forcibly gives anyone a vaccine, where it's your business or the government. I'd always have anyone's back that didn't want to take that. And I could go on and on. But that was the catalyst, you mm-hmm. asked me. That was the catalyst when I decided to run.
That's a good transition to talk about some policy questions if you were governor. Let's imagine you could, you know, you put yourself in a time machine. You were governor on March of 2020. The coronavirus starts to spread, starts to come in the news. What would your response have looked like?
Well, that's a good question. And I think it's the government has a role. Mm-hmm. The government has a role in alerting people to what it knows or the issues on health and safety and encouraging people to practice proper health safety issues, like, you know, distancing, you know, washing your hands. If you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. I would never require that. There's a lot of evidence, of course, it shows from respiratory illnesses. It doesn't, it's not effective anyway. But if it makes you feel good, wear it. But the government doesn't have a role in closing schools, in closing businesses. That's the lens I look through is what is the fundamental role of government? And the fundamental role of government's always to defend your God-given liberties. That's why we have a constitution that we swear an allegiance to. We don't swear an allegiance to a king or queen or the military. We swear allegiance to a little document that was specifically written to protect our God-given liberties. In other words, you could say that the fundamental role of government really is to defend you from government, because we're already born of our natural rights, not a privilege. And these are our natural rights. These are our birthrights of liberty. And I wouldn't do anything to jeopardize those.
Even now we're seeing, you know, the federal government coming in and essentially mandating vaccines on federal employees. We see, you know, Texas National Guard is being mandated to get the vaccine. And we even see large private employers in Texas saying that you have to get the COVID vaccine or get fired. What would be your response to that?
Well, I would never let employers in Texas do that. And there's no reason why the state shouldn't push back on the federal government about this issue and many issues. Whether I'm committed to getting prayer back in schools, for instance, to restoring our culture. I think that was fundamental to and sort of the catalyst for the sexual revolution, for everything else that we've experienced from that, from abortion, divorce, and really the destruction of the traditional family. In a Huffines administration, for instance, I want to make sure that we put prayer back in our schools, in all of our classrooms in Texas. And I dare the federal government to come in and send the prayer police in. I want that fight. I want the federal government to come in and say, okay, you can't pray in school. And I relish that opportunity in a Huffines administration. Look, my opponent is a career politician, 30 years in elected office, Abbott is. And like I said, he's never had an opponent in a Republican primary. He's the definition, really, of a political windsock. Career politicians are always concerned about what? Their careers. And I have a different way of seeing everything. I don't need a new career, Brandon. I've already got a great career. I've got a great family. And I'm doing this job because the job's not getting done. And I'm here to solve the problems. I'll be the first businessman to sit in that chair since Bill Clement's first one in 78. And there's just a big difference in how I look at things. I want to solve the issues, no matter the cost, no matter the political cost, I should say. Because it doesn't matter. What matters is solving the issues for Texas.
One of the big issues that's getting a lot of national attention right now is, of course, the surge at the southern border, this invasion we have right now of illegal aliens crossing. It's certainly been an issue that's been going on for a while. It's certainly spiked since President Joe Biden took office. What would your border response be?
Well, I've got a clear plan to secure the border, and I've had it out on the website for quite a while. I'm going to finish Trump's wall, and I'm going to build it for hundreds of miles. I've been at the border three times in the last 90 days or so, and I was on the committee in Austin in the Senate for border security. So I'm somewhat quite familiar with the situation. This is a disaster, as you know. This is a true invasion. But let me just set the table, then I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Border Patrol is saying about 2 million illegals going to flood into Texas in a 12-month period unapprehended. Even if you cut that in half, that's an invasion. And we actually, just this summer alone, more illegals have come into Texas than live in the city of Fort Worth, for instance. They've caught illegals from 150 different countries since the beginning of the year. It's a premeditated attack on Texas, and the federal government's never going to secure the border. The federal government has not and will not secure the border. They never will. The only chance we have of securing the borders of a courageous governor of Texas. And the key to my plan is I will never ask permission from the federal government to secure the Texas border. It's not going to happen. This is our border. I'm going to finish Trump's wall. I'm going to build it for hundreds of miles. I've been down there. I've seen it. It's a tremendous wall. I think we're going to rename it the Texas Wall. Mm-hmm. And it's going to cost $3.5-4 billion. It's okay, because I'm a business guy. That's about a one-year payback for what we spend on illegal immigration in the state of Texas with the new illegal immigration flooding in. But the most significant thing I'm going to do is use the United States Constitution. And that's Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, clearly gives the states their ability to defend themselves from an invasion if the federal government's not coming to their aid. I'm going to engage the entire Texas military, over 20,000. We're going to secure the river. We're going to immediately return all illegals to the Mexico side of the river when they get on our side. We're going to find them all, and we're going to move along the river when they're crossing, and we're going to make sure they're returned back to Mexico. There are 25 bridges over the river. I'm going to stop all inbound commercial traffic from Mexico. This is strategic. This is to make sure Mexico feels the economic pain till they secure their side of the river. I love Mexico, but they are being a very bad neighbor, and they need to secure their side of the river. We do about $250 billion worth of trade with Mexico annually. Texas does. That much comes into Texas. It's all going to stop until they take control of their side of the river from the cartels. The cartels are smuggling all these folks in. They're making hundreds of millions and billions of dollars on human trafficking, sex trafficking, drug trafficking. And these are the most violent, dangerous criminal organizations on earth. And we got to stop them. That poison's all coming into Texas.
Mm-hmm. Would stopping the trade, though, would that have a negative impact on the economy of Texas?
It will. It will. No doubt about it. But I look at it this way. If you have cancer and you need to cure it, and sometimes it's pretty dadgum painful. There's a lot of side effects to it. But we're out of time on this issue. This is an invasion. Mm-hmm. It's got to stop. I'm going to do in 30 days, which no one's done in 30 years, if ever. I'm going to actually secure the border. And the only hope we have is with a courageous governor of Texas. Look, if Abbott wanted to secure the border, he could have done it 7 years ago, or he could do it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The border, his program is never going to secure the border. It never is. Mm-hmm. That's why this election, the primary election in the Republican Party for governor of Texas, is the most important election in the country in 22. And it might show up to be one of the most important in the history of our country.
Another issue that's hit headlines nationally has been Texas's Heartbeat Act, protecting lives at 6 weeks. Went into effect at the beginning of September. Already you've seen Democrats fighting it, from President Joe Biden on down, and lawsuits. If you were governor of Texas, what would you do to continue to move the ball forward on pro-life legislation?
Well, I wouldn't rest until I knew that there was no more abortions. I believe in life from conception to natural death, no exceptions. And I look at it simply as that a person at 6 weeks old, or a person at 6 months old, or 60 years old, is still a person. Mm-hmm. And if you take that life, the result's the same. I mean, if you kill someone and they're 60 years old or 6 years old, or the result's the same,
sure,
whether it's in the womb or out of the womb. And so I'm not going to rest until that's...
Mm-hmm. So any exceptions?
No.
No exceptions. Okay. Another issue that's been a real struggle to push through the legislature this year has been banning gender modification, gender mutilation in children. Governor Abbott has said that he won't add it to the special session agenda because it doesn't have the votes in the House. Do you believe him?
No, I don't believe him. I learned when I was there in the legislature that a lot of what we see isn't what's happening. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is just like I said earlier, it's like a hustle.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to pick before session what bills are going to move, who's going to be committee chair, who's going to kill these pieces of legislation. Most of it all has the governor's fingerprints all over it. The governor could get any bill done he wants. Mm-hmm. He can make the speaker bring those bills up, hold everybody accountable. If that bill gets to the floor, it's going to pass. They just don't want to vote for it. The Republicans don't want to vote for it. Neither does the governor. He doesn't want it to be law. I've worked with Jeff Younger for years on this issue. He was the father of the child that's really close now to getting a gender change surgery on him. This is just an embarrassment for the state of Texas, that Texas is one of the leading states for gender changing surgeries in the nation. And they're gender modifying kids as young as 3 years old, mainly boys, and they're going to chemically castrate or physically castrate them before they reach puberty. We could just pass a bill real quick and stop it all. Mm-hmm. But the governor doesn't want to stop it all. And neither are a lot of the rhinos in the House.
Another issue that politicians have constantly promised is to lower property taxes. Texas has one of the biggest property tax burdens in the nation. I've seen your billboards. You want to eliminate property taxes. How do you realistically get that done?
It's very doable. It really is. Let me just start by saying Texans are tired of renting their property from the government. They're tired of renting their homes from the government. And in Texas, you just get this concept is that you really never own any real estate. All you do is rent it from the government, whether it's an office building, an apartment, your home, your land, your ranch, your farm. It's all taxed. They have a first lien on it, and you have to pay that, or they're going to come foreclose you out. So you really don't have the liberty of a private property, of owning private property or in your own home in Texas. And the rent just keeps going up and up, and with inflation, it's going to go up double digits. It's a bad way to fund government. It's one of the planks in our Republican Party platform to look at funding government another way. But this is a math problem. I've worked on it for years, is that we can get rid of it in 8 years. We're going to gradually phase it out over 8 years. The best way to do that, it's not to spend all of our money. The state revenues, with all the revenue streams that we have, grows at about 8% annually. Mm-hmm. So my proposal is to cap state spending at an increase of 2%. That gives us a 6% left over to buy down property tax with, which is about $6 billion, $7 billion a year, which is huge. Then we're going to move some over to sales tax, and sales tax will go up as property taxes go down, but it's still very doable. The good news is, on my plan, is that I want to make sure everyone gets to weigh in on this. All the voters are going to have a chance to vote on it. It's going to be a constitutional amendment. So when we cut the head off the snake, it stays dead. Mm-hmm. And sales tax will be higher, but you will have no property tax. And all the funding for the local political subdivisions, the cities, schools, and everything else will come from the state of Texas. So if one school district is getting $10 million in on property tax, that same $10 million will be sent down to the school district, and they'll spend it the exact same way they're spending their $10 million they're getting today. It doesn't change the funding formulas. It doesn't change anything. It's just where the money's coming from. Mm-hmm.
These last few minutes here, I want to talk a little bit about the campaign and the path ahead as we look forward to whenever this primary election ends up being set for. Speaking of money, dollars and cents, Governor Abbott clearly has tens of millions of dollars in his war chest. How do you compete as a challenger against that size of a campaign fund?
Well, we're raising a lot of money, mm-hmm. Brandon. I'm raising a lot between May, the first week of May, and June 30th in our report. I reported over $9 million raised. Now, I'm the lead investor on that. But we're continuing to raise a lot of money. I've already raised more money for a statewide challenger than any statewide challenger in the last 15 years in Republican primary. Mm-hmm. It's unprecedented the amount of money my campaign's raised. And we're continuing on that same path, that same trajectory. And it takes a lot of money in Texas. And Texas is huge.
Yeah.
It really is. I'm really learning how big it is, although I've always been to most of the state. But no, it's huge. And the media cost is massive. To get the message out takes a lot of resources. And we're going to have the resources to compete. That's one thing my campaign's going to have, that no one's ever had the resources that we've had.
Obviously got a few people joining you in this primary race, mm-hmm. and potentially, before the filing deadline, you could have even more jump in. Are you happy to have them alongside you, or would you rather be doing this one-on-one?
Look, I'm, I'm happy that other folks have entered the race. I think it brings a lot, draws a lot of attention to that we got to get rid of Abbott, a true rhino, 30 years a career politician. So, and so I'm excited about having other people in the race. Of course, at the end of the day, I'm going to win. Mm-hmm. I'm in this to win. I'm not in this to send a message. I'm not in it to make a statement. I don't need another career. I'm here to save Texas. I'm here to get a Republican legislative priorities into law. Mm-hmm. I'm here to make sure that we phase out property taxes. We have a secure border. We have confidence in our elections. And I've got a whole plan to give us confidence in our elections. I'm putting law enforcement in that process about enforcing our election laws. Mm-hmm. I'm here to make sure we get term limits, education freedom. And I can go all the way down the list. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to save Texas. When we save Texas, we got a chance of saving the USA, but we're out of time. And when I say that, I really mean it. There's no cavalry coming over the hill to save the Texas or the country. We are the cavalry. This is it. Mm-hmm. We're 911, and the call's been made. And we all have to step up and do something.
Absolutely. So folks who want to follow your campaign, see what you're doing over the next several months, how can they do that?
Well, I can tell you our greatest days are coming. They really are. And this is our time. And it's a new chapter in Texas history under Huffines administration. It's going to be one you've never seen before. I'm going to prove not only to the United States what it means to be sovereign, I'm going to prove it to the whole world what it means to be sovereign. I will not be asking permission from the federal government to do really anything. This is Texas. We won't bend a knee. We won't bend a knee to any man, to no government for any reason, because this is Texas. You can go to my website, donhuffines.com. I'm all over social media, and you can sign up, and of course, an endorse button, donate button, and all the other stuff.
So, well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
we appreciate
you, Brandon.
It.
Thank you very much.